Hi there, and greetings to everyone seeking and hoping to find the true meaning of life, those sick and tired of this poisonous world whose soul and spirit are bleeding, and of the emptiness and futility of this materialistic civilization. Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life. Welcome to our world of supreme love and immortality, where all human hopes are fulfilled. Welcome to the world of Orthodox Christian spirituality, a world now unknown to the West, which once had the key, but lost it a long time ago, the key that has an answer to every question. My name is monk Arsenije Jovanović. I live in the monastery of Ostrog, Montenegro. It is never too easy to talk on spiritual issues, especially when it has to be in foreign language, which is English to me. I apologize in advance for possible mistakes. However, I believe God will help me to say the word and you to understand it. So, let us embark on our waves. Good evening, dear listeners. We are back again together in our radio program, in our radio show, The Way, The Truth, and The Life. For a certain period of time, I was not able to record and to continue with my radio show about the life of mine in those years when I was about 29 years old. I was still in the United States, and actually my stay was ending in America, and I was about to leave American land. It was June 1993. So when I was departing and leaving New York City, I remember I was in yellow cab, New York taxi, and as I was departing from the city and saying silently farewell to this big city that I spent almost 6 years, I was wondering, how long is this city going to last? And how long people in New York is going to be functional, if I can express myself this way. Because I remember those years in New York City, and I remember that great ocean of people of many races and nationalities. And especially during the rush hour, when I was together with hundreds of thousands of people who were running around and going down to the subway, going up from the subway, rushing all over through the streets and avenues of Manhattan. And I was a witness to see many people. Of course, I'm not talking about those bums and homeless and junkies and all those low-level people, but I'm talking about, like, let's say, regular, normal people who had their jobs and they were working, but especially after work, at rush hour, when they were leaving their jobs and going back home. I used to see a lot of disturbed people on the streets. Many people talking to themselves, like quarreling and fighting with somebody. A lot of people were under great stress coming back from their jobs and still fighting with the imaginary boss or colleague or whoever made them upset that day. And sometimes it would really look to me like I'm in a great madhouse, like Manhattan was to me in those years. And as I was riding in yellow cab, I was wondering, how long is this going to last? How long is this world, this American nation, this city of New York is going to last? Because it looked to me that it's on the verge of some kind of disaster, that it's not too long before people are going really to be insane and starting to do things that are really crazy and dangerous for themselves and for others. And it also ensured me and encouraged me to leave this crazy world. Although I didn't hate American people, I didn't hate New Yorkers, I didn't hate New York City. I loved it. I had a lot of good friendships and loves, and I met very nice people, and I had many times I had a good time over there, and I met those beautiful people in Orthodox Church, and I became iconographer. I found my art. I found my expression in art, and I had few really loves with certain girls over there, and all those things made me not to hate New York. But still, since I tasted the most beautiful love of God, the love of Son of God, Jesus Christ, and since I have realized that for me, not for everybody, but for me, it was impossible to be together completely with Christ and to stay living in New York City. And not only in New York City, but in world in general. When I say world, I didn't mean to die, but in a worldly way of life. So we were heading towards Kennedy Airport, and very similarly, as I was leaving 6 years before that, as I was leaving my home city of Belgrade in Serbia, almost in the same manner when I was now departing from New York City and leaving it behind me, I had a mixture of feelings in my heart between happiness, joy, but also together with some kind of sorrow and melancholy. But in general, I was joyful because I was heading towards the life that I was dreaming about. And it was monastic life. Life not known to this world, and very often ridiculed and even thought as something pathological and morbid. But this world doesn't know how beautiful wealth is hidden within the walls of monastic cell and within the walls of a monastery. So finally, I found myself at Kennedy Airport, and I remember it was some kind of pretty cheap flight and some very cheap company, and I regretted that I have bought a ticket, airplane ticket, for such a small amount of money, because this company was almost under the bankrupt. And since I was living in New York City, I never went to buy something cheap or the cheapest, because I have realized, as some say, I'm not rich enough to buy cheap stuff, because it decays very fast and you have to buy it again. But this time I didn't have enough money. I had to repay some debts, so a certain small amount of money remained for my trip. So I was looking in newspapers, and I found this very cheap flight from some unknown air company. So when we entered finally in the aircraft, I saw that it was very old, and the paint was all over in the cabin, on many places scratched, and even the tapestry of the seats was torn away on many spots, where I have realized, I said, what kind of airplane this? Is this some kind of museum piece or something from history? It looked really old and used. But I said, well, that doesn't mean that it's not an airplane. But it was really funny, and not only funny. So when we finally departed from American land, after 6 years of my life over there, and as the plane was reaching the proper height in the air, so after about not more than 25 minutes since we departed, at one moment we heard the signal sound from the speaker in the cabin, and then the captain of airplane was addressing us. And he said, dear passengers, this is the captain of your airplane, and I have to tell you something. And then he said, there is no reason for panic, but I have to inform you about something. So as soon as he said, there is no need for panic, everybody went in panic. And myself also, he said, what is he talking about? Why there is no need for panic? Of course there is no need for panic. What kind of panic he's talking about? And then he said, well, you see, the right engine, the engine on the right wing of the aircraft is sparkling. It gives sparks away, and it looks like that there is a fire, a small fire for now in that engine, and it is very dangerous for us to continue the flight. So what we have to do is to go back to Kennedy Airport, but in the meantime, we have to spill out all the kerosene from the wing, because the wing was a tank for this fuel. And he said, now we are going to leak out the whole kerosene from the right wing, and only after we empty the wing, we are going to land down at the Kennedy Airport, because it is going to be dangerous to land with a full wing of fuel. And the irony was that I was sitting right next to right wing, and in a few moments I have seen that there was some kind of outlet at the plane, and some lid just opened up, and I saw a very wide end of some kind of a pipe, and at the very next moment from that pipe rushed out the fuel, the kerosene. And it was like a strong spring rushing out from the wing, right wing, and it looked really terrifying, I have to admit. It looked very scary, because all of a sudden you realize that it is a very dangerous situation, and that it is a great possibility that something bad happens. For example, fire, or just losing the height. And the very landing was also in a question, how is it going to be? So, and at the very moment when he said that there is no reason for panic, many screams and shouts were heard in the cabin. Like, people were shouting and screaming, saying, what is going on? What is this? Just, it was like a subconscious reaction. And I have to admit, I didn't feel good at all. As a matter of fact, I was really scared. And because I never loved, I never enjoyed, you know, airplane flights. And I was always waiting to land and to finish the flight. So this time, it was really very, very bad. And my heart started to beat strongly. I said to myself, how scared I am, how big coward I am. And my heart was beating, and my throat became dry, my mouth became dry. I couldn't even swallow a fraction of saliva. And it lasted for about 10 or 15 minutes, this agony of mine. But then after that, I said to myself, why are you acting this way, my friend Alexander? Why are you acting this way? Aren't you a Christian? Didn't you realize, didn't you see how powerful God is? So why are you scared like a little child this time? So what? Even if plane falls down in the ocean, even if it bursts in fire, so what? You're going to die. You're going to die anyway. Sooner or later, you are going to die. So why don't you die? Why not now? And anyway, you are going to stay immortal. You're going to stay alive, even if your body vanishes in the ocean or in the fire. So just calm down, relax, Alexander, relax, and pray. So I started to pray, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner. But not to have mercy on me to survive, not that, but to get peaceful again, to acquire, bring back my calm state of my mind and my heart. But it was not that easy, since I was so disturbed for last year, whole year, being in that terrible struggle with my fears and with my psychical disturbance. Although Father Ephraim helped me a lot, helped me greatly, back there in Queens, New York, when he read a prayer over me and helped me to conquer the worst fears. But still, I was very shaky, and I didn't acquire my old peace of mind when I was a younger man, back in Yugoslavia when I was a young man. So now, over this hard state of my mind, this terrible event happened. But I have to tell you, really, the prayer helped me greatly. And not only like self-suggestion, but or some kind of self-hypnosis, but really the grace of the Lord, the grace of the Jesus prayer came to me, and I felt such a peacefulness, such a calmness. And I said to myself, so what? To die or not to die right now, it doesn't really matter. Even if I die right now, I will go and be with my beautiful Jesus Christ. I'll be with my God. I'll be with God the Father in that beautiful realm that I have tasted in those beautiful moments when I was back there in New York and in the monastery of St. Tikhon of Zadonsk. So I said, I will not think about what is going on in the airplane, and I will continue with the prayer. So I just closed my eyes and continued with the prayer, with a prayer rope in my hand. And not very long after that, it happened that we landed safely, and people were really joyful, and they were applauding with their hands and screaming from happiness that we survived. But I was calm. I really calmed really before our landing. And so now we had to wait for about 3 hours until the engine was fixed and until we filled our right wing with the fuel again. So finally, the whole comedy was finished. I remember when we landed, when we were staying there on the airport, all of a sudden there's some kind of mechanic vehicle with a ladder came down underneath the right wing. So an officer, a technician with a big screwdriver in his right hand, he came out on the vehicle and he climbed up that ladder, long ladder, and he came right next to the engine and started to fix something with that big screwdriver. And to me, it looked really ridiculous and tragicomical. So finally they finished it. We had some kind of very poor dinner. And finally we departed again for the second time, and this time for good, from American land. During the flight, I couldn't sleep from the whole thing being disturbed and exhausted. And my good old fears were still there, and my heart was trembling from the whole situation, and I didn't really know what is expecting me back in Europe, back in old land. My plan was to go to Greece, and I had a ticket, New York City, Athens. So we were flying towards Greece, towards Balkan Peninsula, towards city of Athens, the capital of Greece. And finally, we landed back in good old Europe, in my home continent. And when we came out, the heat of the Greece, of Greek land, hit me. And at that moment, I have remembered the Mediterranean climate. And when I was young man going for vacations, for summer vacations to Greece, to Greek islands, and that good old smell of the Mediterranean Sea and of those Greek ports, big ports, seaports. So what I had to do is to call a monk who was a Serbian monk who was studying theology at Athens Spiritual Academy over there. And we came in touch from New York, since our common friend told me that there was a Serbian monk in Athens and he can help me to reach the Holy Mountain, the Athos, how it is called in Greece. So from the airport, I came finally to the city of Athens. I have found a small cheap hotel for me, and then I started to call this Father David. But I couldn't reach him. The telephone was ringing, but nobody was answering. So I was calling him whole afternoon, and I said maybe he went out somewhere, because at that time, it was 1993, we didn't have mobile phones yet. So I was calling some home phone number, but nobody answered. So I said, okay, I will go out a little bit, see the Athens streets and relax. And I have planned to go to visit some of the churches, because, of course, Greece is also Christian land, and especially in Athens, you can see a lot of beautiful churches. And since I became a pious Christian, the church for me was the most important place. The Christian temple was like a home to me. So I went out, I locked my hotel room door, and I went out. It was very hot, June afternoon in Athens. The asphalt was hot and soft, and it was very hard to breathe, because Athens is a big city with a lot of cars, and there was no any wind. It was so still and very hot, and a lot of car smoke and gas was there. So I was sweating and walking down the Athens streets, and I was praying. As I started to pray again after that event in Queen's Church, when Father Ephrem helped me to go back to the prayer. But still there was this very mysterious pain in my soul. I cannot really explain what kind of feeling was that, but deep pain and deep sorrow and deep longing for that beautiful love of Christ that I had tasted, but it departed from me again. And I was like somebody who was dying from thirst and hunger, but for spiritual food, not for this material food. So I was like being in the world and out of this world, being present in the Athens streets and being somewhere out of them. Only half of me was present and half of me was somewhere, some spiritual realm, I don't know where. And for a long time I was feeling like that, being really deep in myself, feeling some kind of fear and disturbance, but something that you cannot explain with human words, because I was still under the attack of demonic powers who were my masters for many years. I used to belong to them, living the way that I was living. And now they didn't want to lose me that easy. But at the same time, this pain in my soul was at the same time, in a way, sweet. And how can I explain this? When you feel some sorrow for somebody, but you know that everything is okay and that you will see him again. He is not here right now, but you will see him again. So this sorrow was some kind of expectation for something beautiful that will happen, but it doesn't happen yet. So in this melancholical mood that I was in, I was walking through Athens streets and visiting Athens churches. And during that afternoon, I visited at least, if I remember well, 6 or 7 churches, going all the way around the town, walking and visiting the churches. So in every of those churches, I stayed for a while, prayed there, and I left a few tears in every of them, because I was ready to cry, ready to weep all the time. And I cannot explain this state of my heart in those days, being alone somewhere in the world, but still not alone, feeling the presence of the Lord, but not on that level or in that strength of that feeling that I was longing for.
welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life.
So when I finally came back home in my hotel room that evening, I continued to call monk Father David, but he didn't answer again. So I didn't go to the bed yet, and I sat next to the open window watching, because I was at certain hill in Athens, so I could see Athens in front of me to very far distance. And I was sitting there and thinking, what is going to be with me? What is going to happen with me? Where I'm going to finally settle? Mount Athos, Serbia, who knows where? So finally I went in bed. Next morning, I continued to call Father David, but I have realized and I understood that he's not in Athens, definitely, and that to stay there, there is no sense of staying still in Athens. So I made a decision. I will take a bus to Thessaloniki and try to see there what are the possibilities, how to get and how to reach Holy Mount Athos. So finally, I found myself in bus heading from Athens towards Thessaloniki. It was a pretty long ride. I think it was like 7 or 8 hours bus ride. And the bus was full of passengers, joyful people. It was summer. Many of them were going to their summer vacations. There was a lot of laughing and talking, and they were all dressed in colorful suits, dresses and skirts and shirts. Many of them had their sunglasses and sun hats on their heads. And I was there on one of those seats in this bus, dressed in monastic. Although I was not dressed in black, simple dress with a pretty long beard, with long hair, silent, withdrawn into myself, thinking, praying, and sometimes crying, and fighting with this indescribable fear. And not only fear, but some kind of anxiety about something that it is about to happen, but you don't know what. And it was all the time mixed with some silent, hidden joy and this anxiety and very strange, unexplainable fear. And the most prominent feeling was that I was feeling my heart all the time. Like, you never feel that you have your heart. But I was conscious all the time of my heart beating, trembling, sometimes shaking, sometimes being full of joy, sometimes full of pain. But all the time I felt that I have big, warm heart in my chest. And most of the time it was some kind of subconscious fear and pain in the heart. And it was provoked also by prayer, because the Holy Fathers say that when you descend your mind into your heart and when you pray there, then you will start to feel certain pain, but not unpleasant pain, more like a slight pleasant pain in your heart. So that's what I was feeling, and I was like hit in the heart. And very often the tears would come down from my eyes, but not out of despair, but out of some silent love and joy was coming to me and leaving me. So it is very hard to explain those feelings that I was going through those days and maybe those years since my conversion, but especially after this turnabout, what happened, this, how can I explain, event that happened in the monastery of St. Ikon of Zadonsk, where I had this demonical attack. And from that moment, I was healed to a certain level from Father Ephrem, but not completely. And now I was expecting to go to Mount Athos and to find their experienced elders and to try to help myself to get rid of those constant tiring fears. Sometimes the thoughts would come to me and say, go to some pharmacy and buy some sedatives. Go get some pills and calm yourself. But of course, I was responding to those thoughts, never. I'm not going to get drugs in my life anymore. Ask Lord to help me to stand this, to endure this. And I'm sure, because I felt His power, He's going to heal my heart. He's going to heal me. He's going to heal my soul. He's going to heal my whole body, my whole being. And I'm not going to take drugs anymore. So finally we arrived at Thessaloniki, and there acquired that there is a local bus going from Thessaloniki to that peninsula on Chalkidiki, going to the last point, last stop, which is called Uranopoli. And from that little seaport city, little sea town, from that point the holy mountain starts, and there is a border that civilians cannot go there anymore, and women at all. So I took that bus, and I was on my way from Thessaloniki to Chalkidiki. I was in bus again, and I was watching Greek country that we were riding through, and I was admiring how beautiful Greek country was, and how beauty-loving was this people. Greek people is old, wise people, people who were always looking for a meaning of life, for spiritual fulfillment. Even before Christ, with antique philosophers, they were always very esoterical and very mystical people, and they loved beauty. Everywhere you could see everything in a beautiful manner. Especially I used to love to see those small graveyards sometimes next to the road. A graveyard, a little white painted church, and those cypress trees always around the church and around the graves. And it was so nice, so beautiful places. Sometimes we think about cemeteries something scary or something that you shouldn't be there. But those cemeteries were so cute, so sweet. That much that you had a desire to go there and to be there, to stay there for a while, to think, to pray there. So finally, we have arrived at our last stop, and it was a little town of Uranopolis. So now in Uranopolis, I understood that I was obliged to acquire some kind of license to get into this monastic republic called Holy Mountain of Athos. And there was an office where I was supposed to give my documents, my details, and to get this paper. And that was not easy at all, because at that time there was an office in Thessaloniki. I was supposed to do that, but I didn't know that. So this in Uranopolis, you were actually just able to receive, to pick up this when it comes from Thessaloniki. So now I was in very tricky situation, didn't know what to do. So I started to ask them to help me not to go back to Thessaloniki again just for this paper. So they told me, no, we cannot do that. So now I have realized that I have to go to, not all the way to Thessaloniki, but there was a, I didn't know that, there was a small monastery called Kakovo, not far away from there, maybe 20 minutes by car. And this little monastery was part of Serbian monastery of Hilandar on Mount Athos. It is called Metohion, which means that this little monastery belongs to the monastery of Hilandar. It's not independent monastery, and it's there to help Serbian people to reach Mount Athos. So I went there, and it was already evening, so I finally managed to find this little monastery, and since it was too late to do anything, I asked for to stay for a night, so they allowed me to do that, although I didn't announce myself at that day, so they are not accepting that easy somebody who are coming that late in the evening, since it was a monastery and there was a certain way of life there. Especially in the evening, they are locking their doors and they are actually praying at that time. But finally, when they opened the door to me, they were generous and they said, okay, brother. They have realized I'm some kind of novice, although I didn't have a monastic vestment on myself, because they told me in back there in Pennsylvania that I had to be stripped, because since I'm leaving their monastery. They were those who dressed me in the monastic robe, and now, since I'm leaving them, I'm obliged to be stripped of that garment. So I was like any other civilian, but plain, very dressed very plainly, black, with long hair and beard, not that long, but not short anymore. So they have realized that I'm a pious person, that I'm not just a tourist. So they accepted me, and next day, with the Father Superior of this small monastery, I managed to arrange to finish all those details that were important for this admission to Mount Athos. And then from that monastery, the Father Superior called the office in Uranopolis, and finally I departed again. And so when I got in Uranopolis, finally I have received my permission paper to get to the Mount Athos. So finally I was happy to keep this paper, some kind of a traveling document, almost like a passport to enter this holy monastic land. And it was really very exciting to me, since I have realized even I am in the Greek land, but still the Mount Athos doesn't belong to the officially to the Greek land, because you need another document to enter there. And more than that, I was so excited to see real monks now, although I've been with monks in the United States, and I'm not going to say that those monks back in Pennsylvania and St. Ignatius were not real monks. They were real monks. But, you know, America is America, and Greece and Mount Athos is something else. And not only that, those monks that I have met in Pennsylvania, they're young people, mostly. But here now, I have seen real old monks, a man that have spent many decades of their life in Mount Athos, in a monastic way of life, in the monasteries. And you could see this on their faces. They were so serious, but in a way, at the same time, full of joy and some kind of serenity, peacefulness. And they were so nice to look at their faces. Many of them were pretty old people, old monks, with white beards and hair, and some of them were dressed very neat and nice, but some of them were dressed in some old monastic vestments. But some of those monks were in very old and used vestments with the patches on them. So they looked like a real monks, people who didn't really care how they looked like. They were not taking care that to be nice looking, so that people would say, oh, look at this, how beautiful they are. They didn't care about that. They didn't care how people are going to think about them. They only cared how the Lord, God, will look at their souls. Are they clean or not? And if those vestments were not clean, it was not much important to them. Although they were not really like a homeless bums, of course, on New York streets. Maybe they are dusty from the road, but they were not dirty, of course. So I was so excited to see those real monks, people who spend many years as a monks in their lives. And to me, it was so beautiful to see, because I was planning to become a monk one day. And since I have read many lives of the saints and many books about monks, I was really imagining how this might be, to find yourself in a real monastery with 30, 40, 50, 60 monks, with a very serious way of spiritual life, very serious cycle of church prayers and church services. And then I have realized how much I fell in love with monastic life, and how deeply I have realized how different and beautiful this way of life in comparison with this worldly life that I used to live for the last 30 years. So finally the boat arrived, the ship, as a matter of fact, arrived, and a lot of pilgrims went out, and then another group of pilgrims together with me, who were ready to go to Mount Athos, we entered the ship, and the ship started on its way towards Mount Athos. I was so excited, and I was so moved to find myself in such an environment. And since there was a pretty strong wind, I went into the cabin, and in the cabin there were many monks as well. So I sat next to them, and I was just there silent and watching them. And many of them were just sitting there silently, holding prayer ropes and praying. They were praying almost all the time. Sometimes they would talk to each other, give to each other a certain smile, but there was no loud talk, loud laugh, and all those acting of worldly people. It was different. But they were not untouchable, of course. They were normal people. I made a conversation with one of them, and he was very gentle, very polite. He didn't act some kind of untouchable, spiritual person that you cannot talk to. No, of course not. But they didn't have need or desire to talk non-stop and to laugh non-stop, as the people in the world do. So after a while, the wind stopped and I went out, and it was beautiful to sail by the coast of Holy Mount Athos. And after a while, the first monasteries appeared. Of course, those who were at the very shore. And so now, for the first time in my life, I was able and I was honored to see alive those monasteries that I used to watch in the books before, back in America. And they looked like fortresses, because in the medieval age, they were really like fortresses, because there was a lot of pirates and bandits, sea robbers, and many other kind of rascals who would go all over. And so those monks used to build monasteries as a tall fortresses, as strong fortresses. Of course, monks never used weapons and they didn't fight. But in this way, they were trying to protect themselves. Very often the Greek Byzantine emperors, they used to send certain number of soldiers, especially when there were critical periods of those periods of history, when, for example, there were Turk invasion or Arabs or anybody else who would try to rob those monasteries. But in general, those monasteries were without weapons, of course, and no soldiers, just monks and prayer. But still, they were trying to protect themselves with high walls and with strong doors. But those monasteries looked so beautiful, and a lot of balconies, and many of the walls were painted in blue, in the deep blue, in this Byzantine blue. So white and blue, sometimes yellow. So it was so new. All those things were new to me, to see this. And then finally, to my great joy, after this beautiful ride with seagulls who were following the ship and catching the pieces of bread that they were, pilgrims were throwing these pieces of bread to the seagulls who would catch them in the flight. It was beautiful to watch them, how free and how beautiful they were. And I was saying to myself, oh my Lord, am I ever going to be that free and that joyful and happy like those seagulls? They were flying and following the ship without any worry. Am I ever going to be worryless like them, oh my Lord, like these beautiful seagulls? And finally, we have arrived at the port called Daphne. At this port, boats and ships usually stop, and from that point on, there were buses who would take monks and pilgrims to the town or village, maybe village, administrative center of Holy Mountain called Caries. And it was, let's say, like a monastic village with a police building, with a building of a monastic government of the Holy Mount Athos. And there was a monastic government over there who consisted of a certain number of abbots of the monasteries who would present some kind of, governing of this peninsula. Because there was 20 monasteries, independent monasteries, and many other small monasteries who would belong to those big monasteries, and also skites, hermitages, and so altogether about 2,000 monks used to live at that time on Mount Athos. Today, I think it's maybe a little more than that, but still around 2,000 monks. So I was so touched and moved and excited when I, for the first time in my life, at the age of 33, like Jesus Christ, I stepped with my sinful foot on the holy land of Mount Athos. And I prayed to the Lord and to the Mother of God, who were protectress of this holy land. Oh Lord, forgive me my life. Forgive all those sins and ugly things that I used to do in my life, to commit in my youth, and cleanse me and help me to be honored to step in your holy land called Holy Mount Athos.
Έφυγα απ' το Φαραώ της Αιγύπτου τη σκλαβιά, μ' αρχηγού του Μωυσή έφτασα ως το Σινά. Στο Σινά να ανεβώ, πολύ το επιθυμώ, στην Αγία Κορυφή και να λέω την ευχή. η ανάβαση σκληρή, Θεέ μου δώσ' μου υπομονή, καρτερία κι αντοχή, να αποκτήσω την ευχή. Πρώτα είπα ακούει η γραφή και το κελί, η Αγία σιωπή δυναμώνουν την ευχή. Την ευχή για να τη λες πρέπει από το μυαλό να πετάξεις μακριά κάθε πράγμα κοσμικό. Στην αρχή την ευχή να τη λες προφορικά κι ύστερα από καιρό θα σου γίνει νοέρα. Και στα λόγια της ευχής να είναι όλη προσοχή, γιατί όταν φανταστείς κινδυνός να πλανηθείς, τον πειράζοντα πολύ ερετίζει η ευχή, και γι' αυτό μην πτωηθείς όταν σου επιτεθεί. Απ' το δέντρο της ευχής βγαίνουνε καρποί γλυκείς, ό,τι μέλι είναι αυτό δεν μπορείς να φανταστείς. Η ευχή πως ενεργεί μη ζητάς να σου το πω, δεν μπορώ να εκφραστώ, είναι θείο μυστικό. Όταν είδεις την ευχή μέσα σου να ενεργεί, φρούρισε την καλά με επίγνωση πολύ. Γέροντά μου σεβαστέ, Μωυσή μου νοείτε, έλα δώσ' μου μια ευχή να αποκτήσω την ευχή. Η μητέρα του Χριστού, ηγουμένη μυστική, ευλογεί τους μοναχούς και τους δίνει την ευχή. Στο συνάνα ανεβώ, πολύ το επιθυμώ, στην Αγία Κορυφή και να λέω την ευχή.
Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life.
And now I realize that I entered a completely different world now. No more asphalt streets, no more crowd, cars, noise, buildings, glass and concrete. Only monasteries, monks, animals like donkeys and horses. Of course, cars and buses, but not that much. And roads, but without asphalt, just ground and pebbles. And of course, now I have seen many monks, a lot of monks being there, because in Daphne and in Caries there is a lot of stores, and monks are coming there to buy supplies and to bring to their monasteries. But not every monk is allowed to do that, just those who are in the economy, in charge of economy of the monastery. And I have seen young monks, novices, old monks. So it was so beautiful to me. Finally, I find myself in my world, in the world of Otto's Christian monasticism, in the spiritual world. Far away back there, there was this tumult of the world. Here, it was beautiful silence, beautiful peace. Although there was a lot of people, but they were different. They were full of prayer. They were full of love. They were full of respect to others. They would very often bow down in front of you, giving a respect to you. And a few times it happened when I addressed some of those monks, asking them something. I would try to kiss their hands, but they would kiss my hand as well. Although I was not a monk, I was not dressed in monastic robes. But they have realized I'm some kind of monk, some kind of novice. So it was so touchy to me to feel and to see this kind of people, so polite, so nice, so full of respect in comparison to people in the world who are, especially in New York, who are ready in every moment to curse, to fight, to hit you, to say a lot of ugly words and to insult, because they were unhappy, they were empty. They didn't have love in their hearts. Here, these people, they were very content. They were lucky. They were happy. They had love. And this love came out from them and affected everybody who would come in touch with them. So this was my first impression since I came to Mount Athos. This great respect that you accept and that you receive from those monastics that I have seen and I have met there. Finally, I took a bus and for a very small amount of money through this jumpy and stony road, we went to administrative center of Mount Athos called Karies, and there I didn't know where to go because I was planning to go to monastery of Filotheo, Greek monastery, not to Serbian monastery of Hilandar. That I left for some other time because I wanted to go to Filotheo, since from this monastery was Father Ephrem, whom I met in New York City, and I was thinking how I am going to get there, because it was not easy. At that time, there was still no taxi. Today, you have some kind of vans that they are driving all over the Mount Athos, and you pay like a fee, a small fee, and then they take you to some other parts of Holy Mountain. But at that time, it was not that easy to travel to the Holy Mountain. Of course, every monastery had their car, but this regular taxi traffic was not established yet on Mount Athos. Although it's not taxi traffic as we think in the world. Those are like vans, small minibuses, who are taking pilgrims to certain monasteries. And it's not that comfortable because the roads are not that smooth, of course. And a lot of dust and a lot of heat and a lot of jumping and trembling. But it was very exotical, if I can say this way. But so now I was standing there and thinking how I am going to reach the monastery of Filotheo, which was not that close at all. If I was to go there by walk, it would take at least 5 or 6 hours. And it was close to midday, and it was extremely hot. So with my bag, which was pretty heavy, it was almost impossible to go there by walk. And then, as a miracle, what happened? It was almost like an impossible thing to happen to me. I would never imagine something like this can happen. Because I remember when I was back there in Queens, New York, where I met Father Ephrem, there was also a Greek monk from his monastery of Filotheo on Mount Athos, a mid-age monk who was his escort. And he used to travel with him all over America and help him, since he used to speak English. Because the elder Ephrem, he didn't speak English. And to be really a great miracle, I have seen this monk. I don't remember his name anymore, but I have seen him in the middle of Karies, in the little town of Karies. And I said, "Father, do you remember me?" He said, "Of course I remember you, but what happened? You don't have your monastic vestment on yourself anymore." And then I explained to him what happened, and he said, "Oh, don't worry about it. When you once dress monastic vestment, the God gave it to you. And if you didn't commit any kind of sin that you are going to be punished with stripping off, then don't worry. Your vestment is on you. And God sees your vestment. It doesn't matter that you don't have it on you right now." So he consoled me this way, and he said, and I told him, "Father, you know, I would like to go and visit your monastery." He said, "No problem. Now the car, the jeep is coming from the monastery. He will be here in about 20 minutes. And we'll go together." I couldn't believe to hear that. And it happened like it was arranged. But of course it was not arranged. But it was arranged by God. And then it was again and again from those times on until today that it is always like this. Whenever you go with a sincere heart, with a prayer and with expectation for the Lord's mercy, in every situation everything is settled, everything is arranged for your benefit. So it was so beautiful. And we were sitting there and talking, and he told me that how the Father Ephrem, the elder, the great elder from Mount Athos, is now has a great mission. He has a great mission in the United States, and he is there to establish monasteries, male and female monasteries, all over the American continent, in America and Canada as well. And Father Ephrem is still alive today in 2014, but he is now pretty old. I think he is close to 90. And now he lives in Arizona, in a monastery of St. Anthony the Great. And now we have almost like 20 monasteries founded in North American continent. And today, really, he is like one of the apostles. And he's a monastic apostle, opening and establishing and founding monasteries on North American continent. So this beautiful, nice man, I think his name was Father Jonas. So Father, we were sitting there, and then Father Jonas told me that the jeep from the monastery is arriving, and we have to go to the parking lot and to wait for him. And then finally, the jeep arrived, and with three more pilgrims and one more monk, we entered the big jeep, and we started our trip towards Monastery of Filoteo. The road was very bumpy and full of dust and pebbles, and the car was jumping all the time, and it was very hot, and it was very dusty in the cabin, but it was so beautiful. It was like a safari to me. It was so exotic. And finally, I found myself far away from the world in this monastic paradise, heading towards one of the greatest and the oldest monasteries of Mount Athos, the monastery of Filotheu, where Father Ephrem was spiritual father and the abbot at that time. My joy and my excitement was great. Finally, we arrived in front of the gate of the holy monastery of Filotheu. God, I thank you for your mercy, Holy Mother of God. I thank you too for your mercy and for your protection and for your love that you showed to me and that you gave it to me. Thank you, O Lord. Thank you to you, O beautiful Mother of God.
Thank you for listening Radio Svetigora, the radio station of the Serbian Orthodox Church, Diocese of Montenegro and the Seaside. Blessed by His High Eminence, Metropolitan Amfilohije.